Christopher Long,
Kanjan Mayer,
Susan Nell,
John Dolan,
and we are Liberal Arts
Voices.
Welcome to Liberal Arts Voices, episode 42. This is an episode on the Humanitarian Engineering and Social Entrepreneurship program here at Penn State, and we are really lucky to have Kanjan here to talk to us about that. So today, why don't we start by having you just tell us a little bit about the program and its design and what its purpose is.
Sure, thank you, Chris. So we are based in the College of Engineering. We bring together students from every single college across campus. Only half the students are engineering students. The other half come from everywhere, from agricultural sciences to liberal arts to business to, we have a partnership with the School of Law and the Hershey Medical School. And we bring all these students together in a common classroom and work on some really compelling global challenges around food security and healthcare. Mm-hmm. Most of our operations are currently in East Africa, in Kenya, Rwanda, and in Tanzania. But we've also worked on ventures in many other parts of the world. And these are all very real entrepreneurial ventures. We have our students work, develop innovative technologies, develop the business strategies that go alongside them to make them fundamentally sustainable and scalable. And then we work with partners in all these countries to launch these as entrepreneurial ventures.
So students who go into the program, do they necessarily travel abroad while they're in it, or is it something that they do much of the work for here in State College?
They do much of the work here, but mm-hmm. we also have a fieldwork experience, and a significant number of students in our core teams do travel.
Okay. And so it's design in a broad sense. When you're talking about engineering design,
mm-hmm.
you're also talking about technology. You're talking about, and so what are the different dimensions of the design that you use?
So if you look at, one way to think about that is through our coursework. So we have a course in design for developing communities. We have a project-based course in humanitarian engineering. And these are all extremely cross-functional teams.
Mm-hmm.
But then we also have a course on social entrepreneurship that focuses on developing business strategies for these ventures. And then we have a post-travel course on reflection and research dissemination, which has three interconnected tracks of ethical decision-making, mm-hmm. grassroots diplomacy, and research dissemination.
So tell me a little bit about this grassroots diplomacy.
Cool. So that's actually one of our newest courses, and it emerged because we started seeing a large need for this. What it means is, how do you work on an entrepreneurial venture with diverse partners on the ground in various radically mm-hmm. different contexts than your own, and work with them in a harmonious manner to get stuff done?
Uh-huh.
And there are just so many different challenges that you encounter. It could be at times bullying from some partners, which is exactly what's happening right now. We're in the middle of a huge challenge. Or it could be advanced communication issues. Or it could be, students, it could be opportunism, it could be, grease payments. And how do you get work done in an ethical manner, in a harmonious manner, without, succumbing to opportunism, and so on.
I want to hear about this, what's going on right now. So can you just tell us a little bit about
that? A little bit.
Okay,
yeah,
I know, you don't want to.
So we actually, for our Meshavu telemedicine system, we actually have operations on the ground. We've had two employees working on this for the last year and a half, and we have four others that have been working on this for about 6 to 8 months. So things are going very smoothly, and we tied up with this one quasi-governmental entity that, so the government helped start this support group for people with diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
So diabetes actually kills twice as many people as HIV does in East Africa.
Wow.
So it's a huge problem, and most of these countries have not figured out what their diabetes strategy is going to be.
Is that in part because of the quality of the kind of food that is cheap there, or what's the source of that?
And there are several factors driving it, but changing lifestyles and lack of education are probably two of the biggest challenges. So it doesn't get caught early, and then just spirals out, and
mm-hmm.
little can be done. And they have completely focused their resources on HIV.
Uh-huh.
So for example, we've done some educational workshops, and typically we will spend about 5 minutes talking about HIV first, and then talk about diabetes.
Uh-huh.
Because some of our partners who are kind of funding this are deriving their money through the HIV channels.
Right, right.
But I digress. So back to the problem at hand, this entity, they see the value of what we are doing, and we charge our customers a small amount of money that goes back to keeping our kiosk operators employed. Mm-hmm. So it's a very entrepreneurial model, and they've realized that they can actually charge people more money and make more money on this, so they are trying to kind of get rid of us now. Mm. So that's the challenge.
That's where the diplomacy comes in.
Exactly, because this is, you know, they have excellent trust in the community, and they have a lot of power and authority, and they have the opinion leaders on their side.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, they really need us because we have some critical elements like our web-based database and other things which they need to operate. So we need to kind of save face for everybody and work out a
mm-hmm.
solution.
Right.
So this is a really good grassroots diplomacy challenge.
Very interesting. So can you tell us a little bit about the role that a student might play in an initiative like this?
So students play all the roles in these initiatives.
Yeah.
So everything from developing the technology to the business strategy, work going to these places and getting stuff done, just the whole nine yards.
Okay.
And also all our students in our core teams are also involved in a concurrent research project. And so the research dissemination track exists to help them take their data or, you know, if they're working on a more theoretical thing and convert that into a publication.
So what happens with the? I mean, you say part of the projects often involve entrepreneurial elements or
mm-hmm.
you know certain business practices and other things. What happens to that kind of stuff? Is that something that the university then owns or how does that work?
Great question. So most of the technologies we develop are published and in the public domain,
mm-hmm.
but at the same time the know-how is sometimes licensed. So for example. We designed these low-cost greenhouses over the last 3 years that cost, after all the profit margins, one-fifth of the local market.
Wow.
So it's a pretty radical design. And we actually licensed it to a for-profit company based in Nairobi that's now manufacturing it for the mass market. So that's one model. But if you're looking at healthcare, you can't do that yet. And that's why we are working more with the Ministry of Health, with a couple of large telecom companies
mm-hmm.
To figure out how to eventually commercialize it and or obsolete ourselves, which is brilliant, right? As entrepreneurs, we want to obsolete ourselves and move on to the next challenge.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
One of the things that that's clear about the entire program is it fits really well into, and Susan Nell's here from our Career Enrichment Network, and we're working hard with our liberal arts students to think about how are you positioning yourself to be successful in the job market when it comes to that time to be facing that when you graduate. And it strikes me that this program is perfect because, you know, you have all the values that we hold dear in the humanities
mm-hmm.
and the values of, you know, sort of including, you know, working with third world countries and helping people, you know, live more fulfilling lives
mm-hmm.
And doing it in an ethical way, as you
mm-hmm.
said, but also combining that with a lot of engineering design skills and entrepreneurial skills.
And I really think in my experience with students who've worked in the HESI projects, it's a great example of a way to demonstrate to potential employers that you've done things as part of a team, that you've also done things and served as a leader because you have so many opportunities as part of the project
mm-hmm.
to really make a contribution.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no doubt that someone who's done something through HESI has something to say.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's really attractive and to an employer certainly, but also helps students maybe see themselves and their skills a little bit differently and think about how they want to use their skills. And so not all students, I would guess, go on the travel portion
mm-hmm.
of the experience, but the students that I've known who have done that, again, looking at, you know, cultural issues, looking at communication issues, understanding what's happening in developing countries, in addition to the actual project, I think that they come back with a very different perspective.
I completely agree. I think this is really transformational for a lot of these students, especially when they travel. And at the same time, they have the opportunity to make a real contribution, whether it's towards directly advancing the venture towards its, you know, the best possible endpoint, as well as to the knowledge base. So, for example, we had one student from international politics. His name was Carrie Bell. And Kerry and his team then authored a journal article on navigating and complying with the IRB institutional review board issues, mm-hmm. Protocols when you're working in a radically different context like this. And you know that journal article is now, there are a bunch of programs around the country and they love this. This is what they make their students read to get ready towards doing research in that context. Mm-hmm. So I see that as a really compelling example of value created on multiple fronts.
Yeah, I mean, what you're talking about really is weaving into a lot of the dimensions we're constantly talking about in the network and in liberal arts in general, the undergraduate research element with writing possible publications that get read widely, right? Including study abroad component, where you're exposed to diversity in a way that is much richer than even, you know, reading it through literature and that sort of thing. You're gaining entrepreneurial skills, you're gaining a lot of collaborative working skills, those kinds of things, mm-hmm. that we, one of the core values we think about in liberal arts. So, I mean, there's all kinds of opportunities here, I think.
Yeah. And one of the things that I've really valued amongst all the liberal arts students that I've had is they are really good critical thinkers.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if it goes back to those, you know, 6, 7, 8 students I'm referring to, or is it more of a liberal arts thing, but they're really good critical thinkers. So they're your strategy people who are sitting in the back of the room and everybody's talking, they're thinking through this and boom, they come up with some really good insights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things we certainly value in liberal arts education, you know, whether we're probably more and less successful depending on students and courses and other things,
right.
And cultivating that in students. But I think, you know, what we're also looking for is the kinds of things that you're offering, which are concrete experiences that allow us to put those values into practice,
mm-hmm.
not just to talk. I mean, it's great to do it in the classroom. It's great to collaborate with your peers in class and to write papers and to do exercises in excellent communication in the classroom, but to be able to do it across disciplines, which your program does, and then across national borders,
mm-hmm.
is really exciting.
And I've always really appreciated the projects because they are so interdisciplinary. I've worked with science students who have a certain perspective on, say, Mashavu and telemedicine, but they're also working with liberal arts students who have
mm-hmm.
a different perspective. And so I don't know that students always realize, certainly we tell them this, but I don't know if they always realize when once you graduate, you're out working in the real world, you will be interacting with people from all different kinds
mm-hmm.
of backgrounds.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you're a liberal arts major who ends up working in a technology-oriented company.
Right.
You need to understand how engineers and scientists think and how they approach problems.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those kinds of real-world experiences really help them to see, oh, okay, this is a little sort of laboratory for what my real life will be after I graduate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the real values of being at a place like Penn State, a major research institution that has all these opportunities to do cross-disciplinary work, and work that we need to, I think, continue to try and encourage students to do. Can you talk a little bit about some more of the programs or the projects that you've done?
Sure. So we've worked on a very wide range of projects so far. From telemedicine has been something we've been working on for like 40 years. And telemedicine is a pretty broad umbrella term, but we have very specific ventures that are in that umbrella that are running in Kenya right now.
Mm-hmm.
But the other area that we have gradually kind of ended up focusing on is food security. And we've been working on low-cost greenhouses, which are now actually we're almost exiting it because we've licensed that to a company in East Africa, and we're actually currently negotiating another contract with a company in Cameroon, and we have queries from Madagascar and all over the place. We're very excited about that venture, and we're trying to scale it up. But some of the other ventures include low-cost solar dryers. We just started working on a very low-cost water harvesting system that you would put around your home to collect some rainwater and store it. And we have also been working on some opportunities at the intersection of rural supply chains and ICT or cell phone-based informal education opportunities for self-employed women in India. And we kind of put that on the back burner, but it seems like it's coming back out again because this is working beautifully, and now they want to do a few more things with it.
Mm.
So we might actually just do a last minute, try to recruit a team and go forward with it.
So these cell phones aren't like really sophisticated smartphones. They're pretty basic kinds of phones that you're dealing with. Is that right?
They are somewhere in between. Because if you go to India, what we call the ABCs, astrology, Bollywood, and cricket, are so popular that a lot of people have these cell phones which can do MP3s, and you can have songs on them. So now we're using that to kind of have these learning modules which are on these phones, and then the women can, you know, they could be anywhere doing anything, and in their copious leisure time, which they don't have, that's when they can listen to this at their convenience.
And it's teaching them entrepreneurial skills and other kinds of things? Is that
It's actually a bunch of learning modules which are designed by the women themselves.
Oh, wow.
So they decide what they think is valuable to others, and they make these modules, and it's on this platform, and the other women can download them and take off with them. So it's completely peer-to-peer, and I was amazed at what they came up with, but how do you fix, or what do you do when you get a snake bite? Or how do you read the bus signs to go somewhere? I mean, they just came up with all kinds of things.
So you really are just thinking about providing the platform that allows this kind of communication to happen. And what's exciting about that, from my perspective, is, you know, it models a different kind of pedagogy, right? It's not the sort of sage on the stage, us telling them what to do. It's just empowering them to teach themselves and teach one another about, you know, how to navigate the situation that's most pertinent to their needs.
Yeah, absolutely. And that it brings out that indigenous knowledge in these communities as well, which is something else that we really value.
Yeah. I think one of the great things about having it come from an educational institution rather than a corporate entity is what you said earlier. You said something like, you know, we want to build in our own obsolescence. I mean, that's not exactly something you often hear a company saying they don't want to build in dependency.
Yeah.
You know? So I think that's an important value. Is that something you talk to students about when you, you know, through the program?
Yeah, we do, but that's a much more advanced conversation.
Mm-hmm.
So we typically bring that in our reflection research dissemination class, because we don't want students to say, oh, our goal is to obsolete ourselves. Here's how we do it.
Can you talk a little bit about the summer travel program? So students will go through the course in the spring and then go to one of these. Do they get to choose where they go, or how does that?
Well, again, we're trying to focus our efforts on Kenya, but this summer, just like past summer, we'll have students in Kenya and Rwanda,
mm-hmm.
for sure. And the core trip is 3 weeks, but some students end up traveling further, depending on what venture they're working on. And the costs are somewhere around $3,000 for the entire thing, but they can get funding from just so many different sources across campus.
Mm-hmm.
And that is another venue for them to be entrepreneurial.
Including the Career Enrichment Network. Okay,
that's right.
Absolutely. So.
And then when they arrive in those 3 weeks or whatever it is, is there a program that they go through, or are they working with the employees that are already over there? Or?
It is an adventure. It is an absolute adventure. We have no agenda for those 3 weeks. Every day they are working on a whole bunch of things on the venture or on the research side of things, and we have a daily debrief, which could be anywhere from 2 to 4 hours,
mm-hmm.
When we say, okay, what did we do today, and where do we go next for tomorrow, for the rest of the time we have here, and beyond, and it just evolves from there. So it's an extremely chaotic environment, but so far, over all these years, we've actually come back with a lot more accomplished than we thought we could.
Mm-hmm.
And we do have a fellows program where we have two or three of our students who are there for 6 months,
mm-hmm.
from Jan through July. And so our fellows just booked their tickets yesterday.
So do you have a relationship with people there that helps facilitate this?
Yeah, several. And that's exactly why we have been working over there, is over time we build this very, very rich ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
We have a center for former street dwelling youth that we work with. We've been working very closely with the Ministry of Health, and they've been very good supporters. With a company, Safaricom, which is one of the largest telecom companies in Kenya, is a major partner. So we've got a whole bunch of people we work with.
And there's a really neat video. When did the Global Penn State video come to Kenya with you? That was probably
2010.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's a really neat Global Penn State video that had been done a few years ago that followed a couple of the ventures that you were there to work on that summer. So Mashavu, the telemedicine, and you were doing a venture on cell phones for job opportunities, I think, at the time.
Correct, Vishfast,
okay.
Yes.
So it gives you a sense, you know, you
yeah.
get to kind of follow the students around and they have some comments about what they're doing and
mm-hmm.
what the experience is like, and it's kind of a neat resource.
That's,
it's on YouTube.
Yeah, that's, I have, we'll link to it, but that was produced by WPSU, so they had some good production value, I'm sure, on that.
Absolutely. Those guys are awesome.
Yeah.
I know whenever I was in the College of Science and I would go to talk to first-year seminars of pre-med students, I would share the clip from Mashavu just to give them a sense of, okay, here's a situation where there's no doctor for hundreds of miles.
Mm-hmm.
How do you deal with that situation? And here's, you know, one possible way that that could be done and that you could contribute. So,
mm-hmm.
Can you talk a little bit about, I know with the courses, we've talked before that there's an opportunity for students who are Paterno Fellows or honors students to have the course for honors credit. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes, actually, thanks for bringing that up. So starting last year, we've actually launched a separate track for honor scholars. So in the spring, one of our seminar classes, there's a separate honors section for honor scholars. And our fall reflection and research dissemination class is actually going to be an honors class for everybody.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
So
they can combine that with their honors thesis, the projects that they're working on.
Yes, they can. And we've had several students do their honors thesis with HESI.
Okay.
And that's another opportunity as well.
Mm-hmm.
And this goes completely, as you said earlier, beyond the classroom or the lab environment to the very, very real world.
Mm-hmm.
And they can make that a very rich.
Yeah, so I imagine that those theses are not only written documents, but they involve, you know, art, certain other kinds of artifacts that illustrate what they've been able to do.
Yep.
And we were just talking a little bit before we started this about the Milking the Rhino competition, the video competition that you do. So you want to tell a little bit about that and maybe encourage some people to participate for next year?
Yeah.
Sure. So this is a competition we host in the fall semester where we invite students from everywhere. Actually, this is not a Penn State thing. It's a global thing, to turn in their 3-minute video pitches on their solution to milk the rhino, which refers to leveraging natural resources for self-determined development. And so they come up with their solution. They talk about the problem, their specific solution, and how they're going to make it sustainable and scalable. And we had about $4,500 in cash awards to give back to all these teams. And we just gave out all that money last week.
Nice.
So,
that's great.
Yeah. We've had some excellent entries, and from our perspective, we do this to get students interested in this field and realize that they can also make a difference.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not a difference this is a really sustainable and scalable difference, and that's where the difference is.
Mm-hmm.
Because a lot of these global challenges are really challenges of scale. You can solve a problem for 5, 10, 15 people through charity or otherwise, but the problem is how do you address a problem faced by 200 million people?
Right.
So
my knowledge of rhinos is very minimal. Is it? Can you actually milk a rhino?
I wouldn't try it. But so there's actually a documentary called Milking the Rhino by Carton Quinn Films, and we really liked the documentary, and that's what inspired this showcase.
Okay.
So.
Great.
Well, you should join us in Kenya next time and we'll try
together.
Yeah,
he was never heard from again.
There's specialized training required before the attempt.
Well, it's been really great to have you here on Liberal Arts Voices, and we encourage all our liberal arts students to look into HESI and to figure out, you know, how they can best do it. Talk to Susan Nell. We have some resources in the Career Enrichment Network to help with that. And talk to Kanjo Mehta to see about all the opportunities that you have. So thank you.
Thanks.
This has been Liberal Arts Voices.